Welcome to the Family Travel Podcast by A Big Peachy Adventure, where we help families plan their adventures, whether it's for a week, indefinite, or anywhere in between. No matter what your budget, we bring you hints and tips from the experts, inspirational stories of families who are living their dreams, as well as must-see highlights from places that we and our guests visit. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Family Travel Podcast. You're joined by Michael and Natalie. Thank you very much for tuning in and listening. We appreciate you all, and we hope that you all had a wonderful Christmas and New Year. And we hope that you've got exciting plans for 2019, whether you are planning on taking a big trip, planning on taking a little trip, just dreaming about a trip, or you are already traveling. We hope it's a good year for you. So today on the show, we have got some Travelling Australia veterans on. We are speaking to the Great Escape Australia, in particular Renee, and ever since we started our podcast, I've been harping on to Michael about getting Renee and her family on the show. They've been travelling for 3 years full time and in a camper trailer, which I find very impressive. They're, as I said, they're veterans of the travelling family community, and they've got so much knowledge which they share really generously through their blogs and also on through other avenues on social media, such as Facebook and then the various travelling family Facebook pages. I'm sure many of you already follow the page, and I'm sure many of you would agree that they're very knowledgeable, and also I love the approach that they take with the stories that they share and the information they give. So anyway, I was really looking forward to our conversation when we finally hooked up an interview with Renee before they took off to New Zealand. But as luck would have it, I was struck down with the flu. So Michael is running solo on this one while I was in bed feeling sorry and miserable for myself. I'm all better now. So before we crack on with our interview, if you're traveling with young kids, in particular babies, I trialed out an awesome little product, which I think that you should check out as well. It's called the Me Light by Mimu Baby, which is a funny name, but it's a great little product. It's a nifty nightlight, and it's not like the other nightlights out there. It's completely portable, it's cord-free, it's dimmable, rechargeable to work for up to 24 hours, and it's also wearable. We found it perfect for any off-grid camping, and we think it's perfect for traveling families. So Adele and the team at Caravanning with Kids, they were kind enough to send us out a Me Light to try out. And we found it perfect for fixing one of Edward's 5 million bottles that he still has through the night. And the beauty of it was it didn't wake up the rest of the family. So we thought that that was where its usefulness would end, with being a nightlight for Edward. But no, we were wrong. Chloe and Elliot also fought over it each night. Chloe loved it as a reading light, so she could sit away reading her Harry Potter, which she's obsessed with at the moment. And as for Elliot, he just wanted to have it next to his bed as a nightlight to keep away those nasty boogeymen. So anyway, if you'd like to know more about the Me Light, we have written a review for Caravanning with Kids, and you can check out the show notes for a link.
I think you've covered everything pretty much I was going to say.
Michael had all these notes that he was going to say for our intro, but I've just waffled on, so he just sat there looking at me. So I guess I better say, or are you going to say it?
You can say it.
So anyway, I hope you all really enjoy our interview with Renee from the Great Escape Australia. Here it is. Thank you, Michael.
Renee, welcome to the Family Travel Podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I guess the main thing we're really interested in is your story. How did you guys end up traveling in the camper trailer and doing your extended travels?
I guess we're no different to anyone else that's done a longer trip. We just were feeling a little bit dissatisfied with, you know, the real life thing, and we wanted to try something different. And, you know, we thought about a few different options. We have traveled quite a bit before. Nathan and I actually met traveling through Europe. So we have traveled worldwide a fair bit. I think we were just ready to do that again and do something a little bit different, explore Australia and just do something a bit different with our life.
Great. And so how long have you guys been on the road for now?
It's just coming up to 3 years. We're just short of 3 years.
So you guys have been traveling and you've been in a camper trailer the whole time?
Pretty much. We stop and work. I'm a registered nurse. So sometimes when we stop and work, I get accommodation included, which is fantastic. So that gives us a little break, and we get to be in a house or a unit or something like this for a little while. But other than that, and a couple of house sits, a couple of visiting friends, yes, we've been in the camper the whole time.
Wow. And how old's your little one?
He was 2 when we left, and he's now 5.
Now 5. So he's pretty used to the camper trailer.
Yeah, he is very used to it.
Yeah, and so if anyone out there is thinking, oh, I'd love to go traveling around Australia, but I don't have a big fancy caravan, all we've got is the camper trailer, you know, what would you say are the main pros and cons of having a camper trailer traveling with a little one?
I guess for us, like the camper trailer that we've got, it certainly wasn't the cheapest camper on the market. We had a different camper prior that we had travelled in, you know, for weekends, and Nathan and I had done a big trip in it a few years back. But we wanted something a bit more comfortable for our travels, and we looked at lots of options, and we actually chose a camper. We could have gone a caravan route. We could have gone a motorhome route. You know, there's pros and cons to every single option. But for us, we wanted a camper, and we've been very happy with that decision. So I guess it just depends on your family and your style of travel. For us, we wanted that off-road, outdoor adventure type experience that we were able to get more so from a camper than some of the other options. So that really worked for us.
Okay. And on that, have you guys managed to get off-road quite a bit, or have you mostly stuck to the bitumen and the main routes?
No, we definitely get off-road at every opportunity. So, we've really made the most of having that off-road capability. We've travelled as many dirt roads as we possibly could find.
Oh, great. Excellent. And what would you say are the hardest things of travelling in a camper with or without a little one?
I guess that the hardest things, a lot of people think it's going to be the pack up and the setup. For us, that's not really an issue. A lot of people think it's going to be wet weather. And again, for us, that's not really an issue. I think wind can be really difficult in a camper. Our kitchen is outside. So if it's blowing a gale, it can make it very difficult to cook dinner. And if it's blowing a gale, it can be quite noisy in a camper as well, because you've got, you know, canvas flapping and poles moving. So I guess wind is probably the biggest challenge. But I mean, that's probably the main thing, really. Yeah, other than that, we don't find it too difficult, but I guess everybody is different, so.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you didn't buy the cheapest camper around, so I'm guessing you guys have got a hard floor camper?
Yeah, we've got a hard floor cub camper, so it's an off-road one. It's it's not the most expensive one on the market, it's sort of mid-range, I suppose, but for us it was really important to get something that was quick and easy to set up and pack up, because we knew we were going to be doing it a lot, and that would like stand the test of time and be able to do all those dirt roads, you know, safely and not be breaking down in the middle of nowhere, falling apart sort of thing. So for us, that Australian made sort of quality was really, really important. We're going to be in it for a long time.
Yeah, fair enough. And when you set off, was it always the plan to be traveling for, you know, 3 years plus, or did you have like a 12-month lap in mind, or how did that go?
We set off with no plans at all. So we set off with a very open mind. We thought we might possibly come back after the year. We have a house in Melbourne that was rented out, so we knew we wouldn't be able to move back for at least a year because it was tenanted. But we didn't really have a time frame. It was just a matter of, well, let's just see how we go. We didn't have a lot of money when we set off. We've worked all along to pay for our trip, so we didn't really know how long the money would last, how it would work, whether, you know, we could have been back in 4 months living with my parents. But it's all worked out and we were really enjoying it, so we just kept going.
Wow, okay. So it was a case of not a massive life dream, saved up for years, went out and bought everything. It was a case of, this travel thing's in our blood. We're going to get the camper and we're going to set off. And if we have to come back, we have to.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, we already had a car that was all set up to go. As I said, we had an older camper that we could have done it in. It just would have been a bit more less luxurious, I suppose. So we ended up getting a new camper for the trip. But other than that, we were pretty ready to go. We'd been on trips before. We knew what we wanted to travel in. We had a pretty good idea that we could do that, you know, without driving each other crazy. And we just thought we'd give it a go and see what happened.
Yeah, and the previous camper, was that a hard floor? Was that a soft floor?
That was a soft floor, sort of unbranded thing. I've never seen one the same since. And we bought that. We used to live in Darwin. We lived in Darwin for a year, 8 years ago. And we bought it up there. We went up to Darwin in like an old Toyota Hiace van with just the two of us, and quickly realised that we couldn't get all the places that we wanted to get in a two-wheel drive option. So when we got to Darwin, we ditched that and we bought our first four-wheel drive and our first camper trailer up there. We spent $5,000 on the camper at the time. And we travelled in that up in the top end, and we did a bit of WA in it and came home to Melbourne And that was our sort of first big Australia trip, but that only lasted, I think, 3 months that time.
Yeah, okay. And so if, I mean, you guys have got a good position here where you've had both the soft floor camper and the hard floor camper. When you've been traveling around, did you find that like a massive difference between those two? And, you know, if a family was thinking of traveling in a camper, you know, is there a huge difference? Like, you'd highly recommend a hard floor, or you just get used to either?
Oh, there was a huge difference. Not really comparing apples with apples, because that was an old, very budget camper, no frills, the first one we had, whereas the one that we've been traveling with has a lot more going for it. But yes, definitely we knew a hard floor would be better. It's so much easier. That old camper of ours, red dust would just get absolutely everywhere because there was nothing but a little cover to keep the red dust out, whereas the hard floor is perfectly sealed. We can go through water crossings, water's not getting in, dust isn't getting in. It's so much quicker and easier to set up. And being off the ground, I really love. I love being up and off the ground in the hard floor for wet weather and for crappy weather and for mud, but also for creatures as well. Like we didn't have any spiders or any little visitors, hardly ever anyway, in the hard floor, whereas we got them quite a lot in the old soft floor.
Now speaking of creatures and, you know, being off the ground and, you know, being away from the creepy crawlies, tell us the story about the snake bite.
Yeah, well, apparently you can't avoid them altogether. Well, I mean, you know, I still can't even believe that happened. So I'm always telling people always ask me about snakes when you're traveling, aren't you worried about snakes? And I say, no, I'm not worried about snakes because I'm an emergency nurse. I see people come in with suspected snake bite, and most of the time it turns out to be nothing, because most of the time snakes are actually quite, you know, they're not particularly nasty creatures. And most of the time, if they choose not to envenomate, and most of the time it turns out absolutely fine. And it's very rare that they bite anyway. So the fact that it actually happened to us completely still blows my mind that Nathan, my husband, actually did get bitten by a snake on our trip. So, yeah, we were at Karajini National Park and Nathan was outside having a shower. We travel with a shower tent and our own shower. So that was only 3 or 4 metres from the camper itself. And when he was coming back from the shower, he turned the light off in the campsite, which we hardly ever do. We don't walk around in the dark normally. But he wanted to get changed really quickly and didn't want anyone to see him. And when he was walking around in the dark, felt something brushed by his foot, felt something sort of like a piercing bite on his toe, and then heard whatever it was sort of slither off into the bushes. So we had to treat it seriously and treat it like a snake bite, and that involved a mad dash to Tom Price Hospital in the middle of the night and then an RFDS flight to Port Hedland. So, yes, that was an unexpected little drama of the trip.
And, you know, to alleviate people's fears or make them worse, the whole process of getting bitten by a snake while you're travelling, just talk us through what actually happened, like, you know, the treatment of it and how long it took and how much time would you generally have if you were particularly envenomated and all that sort of stuff, because I think that's actually quite interesting.
Yeah, and I guess, like, I have a fair bit of knowledge about it because of my line of work, and I actually quite like snakes. I used to have a pet snake at home. So I have quite an interest in them, which, again, is the irony of this happening to us. But really, if you know good snake bite first aid, and if you don't know that, you should. If you're travelling around Australia, you need to learn good snake bite first aid, and you need to travel with, you know, bandages that are appropriate for snake bite first aid. And if you get, you know, a bandage on a limb within a relatively quick time frame, you've got quite a bit of time to then go and seek help and you know, call for help and all that sort of thing. I guess the key thing, one of the key things with snake bite is really not to move the person that's been bitten. And we were really lucky that Nathan was bitten within sort of 3 metres of the car, so we didn't have to do much movement to get him in the car and get him off to the hospital. So that was really good. And Nathan knew that as soon as he'd been bitten, he called out to me. I was in the tent and said, I think I've been bitten by a snake, and he just didn't move. He waited for me to turn the light on, for me to come out. I jumped to the car and got our snake bite bandages, which were in the first aid kit in the car. So everything was really handy. Bandaged him up and we just went straight to the hospital. So the thing is, in a lot of little outback towns is, particularly in Western Australia where we were, is the ambulance service is more often than not run by volunteers. So they're not sitting around at a depot in their uniforms waiting for a call. They're at home in their normal lives, probably asleep. It's, you know, it's late. So it takes time for them to get up and get dressed and get to the ambulance and get out to you. And we were an hour and a half from the town. So I knew that by the time we waited for them to come out and go in, it would be quite a long period of time. So we just made the decision to start driving and try and call for help en route because I knew there was a hospital there. But if we'd been somewhere where I didn't know about a hospital, we could have just stayed put, called 000 and taken their advice, really. So once you get to a little hospital, if it doesn't have pathology facilities, so the ability to take blood and test your blood for envenomation, then you can't stay there. You need to fly out to a hospital that does. So Tom Price is a fantastic little hospital, and if he'd been envenomated and was showing signs of envenomation, they could have dealt with that, definitely. They could have given him anti-venom, and they would have done, I have no doubt they would have done a fantastic job. But it's much safer to get someone to a hospital where they can definitively test, and if they go downhill quickly, have, you know, an ICU facility to deal with it. So that was why we had to fly out with RFDS, not because he was acutely unwell, but because there was the potential for it, and we just had to make sure that he was safe, pretty much.
Okay, so I've got a couple of questions on that one. Mm-hmm. Sat phone. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have a sat phone?
We did. So Karajini National Park actually is one of those rare places that has Optus reception and not Telstra. So we normally have a Telstra phone. We actually do have an Optus SIM that I put in sometimes when we're in those sorts of places. And we did try and call, but our mistake that we made was instead of staying put and trying to call for help and then getting in a car, we got in the car and tried to call from the moving vehicle, and that was where we ran into trouble. So we initially tried with the Optus phone in the car. Nathan was calling while I was driving and we had no luck. So then he tried the sat phone. But anyone that's used a sat phone will know that you really, really preferably need to be stationary and you need to be out in the open. It doesn't always work inside a vehicle, let alone a moving vehicle. So instead of making the decision to stop and get out and make a phone call on the road, we just kept driving because we knew there was Telstra reception coming up and we knew that we'd be able to call for help once we got there. And honestly, I just wanted to get him to hospital and palm him off to someone else so he wasn't my responsibility anymore. But I do think travelling with a sat phone is really important. If we'd been somewhere more remote, that sat phone would have been an absolute godsend, you know?
Yeah, okay. And the RFDS, the Royal Flying Doctors Service flight, was that covered by your ambulance cover?
That doesn't need to be covered by ambulance cover. It is it's a fully funded charity service. So it doesn't cost anything. It's a free service. So it's funded by, you know, charitable donations, and it's an absolutely fantastic service. So no, we didn't. We got a bill for the ambulance that did end up meeting us en route. We got a bill for that, which was covered by our ambulance cover in Victoria, but we never got a bill for the Royal Flying Doctors. We made a donation by choice, but we certainly didn't have to do that. That was just something we chose to do because we were very grateful and we appreciate the service. But no, it's a free service.
Wonderful. And look, what I'll do is I'll link to the Royal Flying Doctor Service donation page in the show notes as well if anyone else wants to donate on behalf, just for the entertainment value of the running commentary on Facebook with Nathan Snakebite as well. And so you guys had a fair bit of media exposure from that too.
Oh yeah, well that was entertaining. I put our Facebook post up about it, and the main thing that came out of that was the ordeal of then having to pack up on my own, which is something that people don't really think about when they travel, you know. Like, I had to pack up the whole camper, and of course we'd been there for 5 days, so we had every single thing you could possibly think of out waiting to be packed up. So all the pack ups I could have done, it was the biggest pack up I could have chosen on my own. So all of that came out of it. So I guess that was part of the story that I told on Facebook, and certainly it has been very popular. And then, yes, a couple of media outlets picked up the story and completely sensationalized it, got all of our names wrong, talked about excruciating pain and Nathan screaming in the dark and all this absolutely hilarious stuff that never happened. But, yes, we did get some interesting media coverage out of it.
On the topic of Facebook, one of the things that I've always loved about the posts and the things that you guys put up is your Keeping It Real series. Now,
yeah.
Some people, you know, if you're following some traveling families, everything is a heavily edited and filtered Instagram photo, and it's all bright and shiny, and it looks like living on the road is this idyllic, perfect lifestyle where there's unicorns and rainbows every day and all that. And we know that's not the case. From your Keeping It Real series, If someone's listening to this and they're not traveling yet, what are the top, you know, two or three things that are not exactly that glamorous about travel and that, you know, people should really be aware of before they make the decision?
I think there's some of the obvious things about, you know, having to go to the toilet in the bush and, you know, use some drop toilets that leave a lot to be desired. Or we camped at one place recently. I don't know if you saw the picture I put on Facebook, but the walls in the shower were so dirty. Someone had actually written "clean me" in the dirt on the wall of the shower. Thankfully, that's a rarity. But, I mean, there's all of those sorts of things. And, you know, they can be avoided depending on where you stay and whether you've got your own facilities and all that sort of stuff. And it also depends on you and what you're used to and what you, you know, don't mind doing. But I think a lot of people know that they're going to have to make changes as far as, you know, showers and toilets and even hygiene and, you know, beauty products go. I guess it's some of the more unexpected things, like I think one of the big challenges is the people that you have to camp with. So, like, you find yourself camping next to such a variety of people, and some of them you get along with instantly, like the, you know, like a house on fire and you'll be friends forever, and other people you hope that you never ever see again in your life. So just the being around strangers all the time and having to deal with that can be challenging for some people as well. I mean, we avoid that by going bush as often as we can. Sometimes we don't have any neighbors for 100 or 200 kilometers. But I guess that's one of the things that I did write about in that post. And I guess the other thing that a lot of people have trouble with, I don't feel it's been particularly difficult for us, but I know it's difficult for a lot of people, is that adjustment period of, you know, life changing so much when you're on the road, and being in close confines with your family members isn't always fun. You know, there will be times when you drive each other crazy to varying degrees depending on your family. So definitely I think that's a big learning curve for most people when they first hit the road, you know, as a family.
Yep, no, that's there's some pretty common things that we hear about, and ironically, that's one of the things I actually love about the travel is, you know, when I stopped doing the 9 to 5, being with the family more all day every day. Maybe I'm just weird, but I actually love that. So
we genuinely love it too. But it's something we hear from a lot of other people, and I think it just takes a bit of time to settle in. You know, it's just a bit of adjustment, and then once you get used to that, you know, being with each other all of the time thing. And I mean, of course, we have times when, well, Nathan and I don't drive each other too crazy. The kid drives us crazy, but I think he would drive us crazy no matter where we were. So yeah, that's just normal child-parent relationships. But yeah, definitely we hear from a lot of other people that can be really challenging for them at the start.
Great. Now, with you guys and your traveling, and you mentioned before that, you know, you're an emergency nurse and also you travel in your camper, but you stop at some places and get accommodation. How hard is it to get work on the road as a nurse, or how have you found it over the last few years?
As a nurse, it's actually exceptionally easy. I'm very, very lucky in my career choice. There are definitely times when I think, God, why on earth do I do this job? But from the perspective of traveling, it is a fantastic career. And Nathan is a carpenter, so that's fantastic too. He hasn't done a whole lot of work because I've wanted to work. That was part of the thing that I wanted to do was branch out and do different things with my nursing. So it's been fantastic from a career perspective for me too. But I was also really lucky with the skills that I had because I'm an emergency nurse. Those are the skills that are most required on the road. That and midwifery, which I don't have, but if you're a midwife, that's also very sought after. I can pretty much pick and choose, and I've started to get to the point where I am getting a little bit more demanding, and I will say, look, I'm not going to go anywhere that doesn't offer me accommodation for my family because I know that I can get it in some places, and I really encourage other nurses to do the same thing because they need us so badly in these towns, and they look after all their doctors, so they should be able to look after their nurses as well.
Wonderful. And we all know it's actually the nurses that run the health facilities. So.
Exactly.
Now, with your travels, you guys have been on the road for 3 years in and around Australia. What's next?
So we're going to New Zealand. We actually put our car, we left our car at the depot to be shipped to New Zealand today.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's going over on whenever the next boat is, I think. I'm not even sure. I've left Nathan to organise all that because I do pretty much all the other organising. And we fly out in 3 weeks. So we're following our car over to New Zealand and we're going to see what happens over there. Sort of the same as here. We don't have a great deal of plan. We were just going to play it by ear and see how we like it and who knows how long we'll be there.
Great. And I guess circling back to the nursing thing as well, I mean, it was a big change for health professionals a few years back with the national registration. I know me, I've got a background as a physio, and it made it a lot easier for me to fly interstate and work all around Australia. And I can imagine it would have been the same with nursing. Is there an arrangement in New Zealand where you can easily get registered over there?
There is. I'm already registered. All I had to do was pay a fee. So, yeah, it's very easy. You just have to apply, essentially, and you just have to send in, you know, proof that you're registered here and, if you know, your ID documents and all of that, pay your fee. They do things slightly differently over there, is in that they've got a registration and an annual practicing certificate, so I have to pay two fees and get both of those. But, yeah, I'm already registered, and I've started applying for some jobs, and we'll see what happens.
Right. And tell me about the moment when you guys decided, hey, let's go to New Zealand.
Well, Nathan's, my husband's actually a Kiwi. He is, well, he was born in Canada, raised in New Zealand. So he's a Kiwi Canadian that's been living in Australia for a period of time. So my in-laws are there. Ryan's other grandparents are in New Zealand. So we've always had it on our radar to go over there and spend a bit more time with them. It was just, actually, we've been saying for years that we're going to go over. We've just been putting it back and back because we've been enjoying this lifestyle so much. So, yeah, it's time. And we're really excited to explore over there. It's so similar and so different. Like, I'm really looking forward to, you know, checking it out and comparing it to here. And, yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, actually. I'm not looking forward to the weather, but I am looking forward to, yeah, exploring and checking it out. So, and there's no snakes in New Zealand, so that's a bonus.
Yeah. And what are you guys going to – are you going to get a caravan? You're going to keep going with the camper trailer in the colder weather, or
– We talked about taking the camper over, but because we predominantly got it for that off-road capability and we don't really feel like you need that in New Zealand, and obviously there's the worst, the colder weather. So, no, it's sold. It's waiting to be picked up this week. It sold really, really quickly. So it's – going, and we're not really sure what we'll do. We're thinking about buying sort of an old retro caravan and renovating the inside and traveling in that, perhaps just for a bit of a project. So we'll see when we get there what's available, and yeah, we'll just see what happens, really. But I think we might be moving on to caravans for the first time in our lives. We'll see how we go.
Sounds like you guys have got a pretty flexible approach to your travels, which is pretty awesome. What advice would you give to a family who, you know, at the moment they feel like they're trapped in their jobs, they've got their mortgage that they're tied down to, the kids are in school, they've got their extracurriculars, and they feel like they need to have all of these massive plans to get away from that and to take an extended trip? What would be your recommendations, your advice?
Well, I mean, everybody is different, and some people, you know, they need to have plans to feel comfortable, and that's fine. And we've always got a, I suppose you could call it a plan. Like, when we left, our plan was just to head towards Cape York and see what happened. And it took us 8 months to get there, and we finally got there. And then I went, well, now what are we going to do? And so then we had a new goal and we headed towards a new place, and it took us however long it took to get there. So sometimes just having a loose plan, a rough idea of, you know, we want to make sure that we tick off X, Y, and Z. You know, some people want to make sure they get to the northernmost, westernmost, easternmost, all of that sort of thing. But I think if you are planning to do it and you don't plan to work and it's a really massive change for your family, then you do sort of have to plan to do it rather than just dream about it. Or else if it's just a dream, it's not going to happen. So you need to actually, you know, start planning for it. Choose a date. Go, right, we are going to do this, and we're going to do it on this date, and we're going to make it work by that date. And if we don't have enough money, then we'll look at, you know, working as we go. Or I think, you know, if you just dream about it, it might happen, but you need to actually make it happen, really. So that's when planning can be important. But when you get on the road, planning doesn't matter so much. You know, every time we make actual plans, they fall through. You know, we hardly ever make bookings, and the few times that we do, we end up wanting to change them, you know. But everyone's different, and you'll work out your style of how much planning, I guess, you need to do as you go.
Right. And one of the things I look forward to is following your plans as they unfold once you land in New Zealand and work out what you're doing. So where can everyone find you to keep track of what you're up to?
Well, our Facebook page is The Great Escape Australia, and we've got a website of the same name, and Instagram as well. So, yes, we're pretty quiet on at the moment. We're having a nice little break from the whole sort of social media thing at the moment while we're at home, you know, trying to sort our lives out. But I'm sure once we're traveling, we'll get back into it. And yeah, hopefully we can show what New Zealand's like and talk about how to get over there and the differences. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see what comes.
Wonderful. And on that note, it'd be awesome to actually do a round two in about 3 or 4 months' time, if you guys are ready, yeah, willing, yeah, and able, to just to see how that went, because it'd be really interesting to see how it goes going overseas, yeah, with a bit of a loose plan and seeing how that plays out.
Yeah, well, we'll see how we go. I think we'll stop and work for a little bit at first. So we'll see where we are in 4 months. We might not have done anything interesting yet, or we might have. Who knows? We'll see what happens.
Just the fact you're going there is pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Wonderful. All right, Renee, we'll just want to say thank you very much for your time. It's been greatly appreciated. And yeah, look forward to looking at the next chapter of The Great Escape.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Family Friendly House Sitters, the only family-focused house-sitting community. So if you're a homeowner and you're going away at any time in the future and you're more than happy for a lovely family to come in and care for your home and all your beloved pets, now is the time to jump onto familyfriendlyhousesitters.com and register. Not only can you list your home, but you can also search the profiles of families who would love to care for your home and your pets so you can find the perfect match and be confident when you go away that your home and your pets are in the best hands. Not only is it free, but as a special incentive, the first 30 homeowners go into the draw to win some really great prizes. So you've got nothing to lose. Visit familyfriendlyhousesitters.com and register today. Thank you for listening to A Big Peachy Adventure of Families Travelling Full Time. What drives us is hearing of those we've inspired to simplify their life and take the first step towards their travelling goals. So please, if you get any value from what we're doing, the biggest reward we could ask is that you share this podcast with your travelling buddies. Don't forget to click subscribe, and also please leave us a review. 5 stars hopefully, but if not, that's okay. Please leave a comment and let us know what we can do better. If you'd like to connect with us personally or have any questions, you can find us on Facebook at A Big Peachy Adventure. See you on the road and happy travels.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.